You are listening to the Health and Wellness Connection Podcast, the number one wellness podcast designed to provide the latest information to help you achieve your health and wellness goals. Our show features exciting guests, the latest in medical research, and in-depth discussions in current trends on weight loss, nutrition, and fitness. No matter what your interest, the Health and Wellness Podcast has you covered. And now, presenting your illustrious host, Dr. Barry, MD.
Hello, 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 and thank you for listening to the Health and Wellness Connection Podcast. I want to thank you for being a faithful listener and checking us out every week on Afro Vibes Radio. But hey, if you somehow don't get a chance to check us out Thursdays, 4 p.m. Central Standard Time on Afro Vibes Radio, please don't hesitate to check out our podcast page. That's anchor.fm/HW Connection. That's HWCONNECTION. Again, check us out on our anchor.fm podcast page. Check out all the shows uploaded there immediately after the show airs on Afro Vibes Radio. Also, if you want to listen to the show live on Afro Vibes Radio, please download the app, AfroVibesRadio.com. You can download it from the website or go to your local or favorite, mobile OS app, be it Android or iPhone. Download the app on your phone today. You can stream the show as well as the awesome Afrobeat Music Collection live on your phone for free. Again, no money down, all free, all awesomeness. Do it today. Again, if you want to reach out to me personally, you can always get at me on Instagram. My name, Dr. Barry MD, DrBarryMD. Also, you can email me at drbarryhealth@gmail.com. That's Dr. Barry, DrBarryHealth@gmail.com. And last but not least, Facebook is also where we're at, posting all the shows as well as other exciting articles. Check us out at www.facebook.com/nextlevelweightloss. Again, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. We love hearing from listeners. Any feedback, any even sponsorship opportunities, because we are very highly listened podcast, always looking for sponsors. Check us out if you're interested in sponsoring the show. And also, you can do it on the Anchor FM page. You can donate, become a super sponsor. We're going to get a lot of cool freebies for those people who do sign up. So check us out again. It's Dr. Barry here. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for the show. Hello, 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 and welcome, guys, to the Health and Wellness Connection Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for another episode of the Health and Wellness Connection Podcast, what we consider the first and foremost health and wellness podcast / radio show on the interwebs. Now, of course, you know, I'm your host, Dr. Barry. I've been here from the start. But one thing I've told you guys is that I've been fortunate throughout my travels and journey in life to meet a lot of interesting and intelligent people. So, and I told you guys as part of the show, we're going to bring those people on and weigh in on some of these topics that, you know, while I do consider myself quite knowledgeable, I definitely don't know everything. So we try to bring in folks who are really experts in certain areas to really help us better understand certain wellness topics. So that being said, today's topic is, I think, very prescient because we do have an interesting and a very important guest, a young lady who's a good friend of mine, known her for a long time. She is a pediatrician. And the reason why we're bringing her on, because the topic of the show, we're talking about the coronavirus and how it's affecting our kids. I'm sure you guys have heard about the media and how the coronavirus is really, it's really unknown as far as how school is going to restart. This is, you know, we're approaching the fall season and schools are reopening. And everyone's concerned about what the correct approach is and how to kind of, determine, you know, what's safe for the children as far as school and whether or not we should consider other alternatives. And it's overall kind of approach toward how we should, you know, have our kids as far as their interaction with each other and their protections from this virus that seems to be kind of dominant throughout the news. So our special guest today is Dr. Ngozi Obuehi. Are you there, Dr. Obuehi?
I am.
Awesome. Awesome. Again, she is a pediatrician here in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Boye, tell us about yourself and kind of, you know, what you, you know, have done to kind of get to where you are today, so far as your background and everything else. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, hello, everyone. Let's see. So I went to college, University of Georgia, went to medical school, University of Wisconsin, and did my residency at the University of Florida. So clearly I like to be all over the map. Nice. But I ended up being a pediatrician here in Houston at Texas Children's Pediatrics. And I have been in practice now for about 8 years, and love my job. Love it, love it. I work exclusively outpatient, which means in the clinic, and I see kids for their well child checks and more of your minor illnesses, and just trying to make sure that the community stays healthy.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, mm-hmm. Now I'm sure you've heard about this thing they call the coronavirus, and as a pediatrician, I know the big urban legend is that kids don't get sick or kids aren't really affected by it. So I'm assuming you've never seen a coronavirus kid at all, or is that, you know, not the case? What would you
Well, right now in Houston, the coronavirus cases in general are spiking, so absolutely. I'm definitely seeing positive cases. My youngest positive was 4 weeks.
Oh wow.
And then my oldest positive was about 18. Initially, so really,
the entire uh-huh. gamut of the pediatric age range is pretty much yes. at risk. So okay, interesting. Okay, good. Yes. So go ahead, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No problem. So initially we were seeing predominantly teenagers, and you know, the teenagers who weren't quite socially distancing, they were still seeing their friends. But now as it's the cases are going up in the community, parents are becoming positive, which also means that they're bringing it home to their children. And so then that's how we're getting these younger children who are testing positive.
Absolutely. I think actually I have an interesting kind of quick anecdote regarding that. I actually was working in the emergency room, and I saw actually a young, he was six year old. And I remember the grandma brought the child in saying that, well, the kid was around someone who tested positive, and she was 75, and she was bringing in her grandchild in to get seen because the mom, I guess, wasn't there, was busy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the child was fine, but she was concerned because the child was exposed, and she wanted the child tested. So usually I was like, you know what, let's go and test the child, even though the child looks good. And the child mm-hmm. did come back positive. And I was mm-hmm. like, wow. So it's like, how do you tell a parent, a grandmother who's taking care of like a seven-year-old to social distance? And the grandma was extremely successful. She had diabetes, high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. So she was kind of concerned, and she didn't know what to do. But she was the sole caretaker of the child. So, you know, it's like, what do you do? I mean, I know there are ways to protect yourself, but that has to be very difficult. And like, I mean, I don't know if you've seen that in your practice and if you appreciate those kind of scenarios, you know, dealing with patients.
Yeah, so actually in my patient population, we have quite a few grandparents as caretakers, even some great grandparents as caretakers of these young children. And so, and some of these kids that have tested positive are living with, or they live in multi-generational homes. So their grandparents may not be their main guardian, but the mother, the grandparents, the aunt, the uncle may all be in one home. And it's hard to social distance in absolutely. That situation, but we still try to tell at least the parents and the guardians that, okay, please wear a mask while you're in the home, which I mean, most people don't like, but you know, and also see if the child, especially over the age of 2, to see if they can wear a mask when they're in the house. And if it is possible, if it is an older child, to just see if they can stay in their room, and then you can bring like their food, their medicine to them. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, just because caretakers are going to take care of their kids and the kids love to be snuggled up underneath them, it's hard for them to social distance once the child has the disease. I think most parents, when they know that they have it, they really try their best to wash their hands, to social distance, to wear the mask. But when it's vice versa and the child has it, mm-hmm. it's a bit more difficult.
Absolutely. And so that's why, and I think a lot of people are missing the whole why children, even though, first of all, before I even say that, what are the overall dangers for children to the coronavirus? I mean, is it truly that even though they get it, they're fine? Or do they, you know, are there concerns for them actually getting, you know, severe sicknesses? And if so, which kind of, you know, populations are typically, you know, vulnerable?
Mm-hmm. So overall, children, this particular disease, we have been very lucky in that the majority of children have done very well. Great. Most kids who get coronavirus are going to have cough, runny nose, fever, maybe a sore throat, and then they recover like they would from the flu or from the cold. Okay. But there is this emerging disease called MISC, the multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children. And so it's still very rare. There's been about, since March, there's been about 300 cases in the United States, you know, and when you think about the general population of children, 300 cases, it isn't really a lot, but it is an inflammatory process where basically the child is either exposed to COVID-19 or has a COVID-19 positive COVID-19 test. Mm-hmm. They get over the illness, and then 2 to 4 weeks later, they present with an inflammatory response, like their immune system overreacts. Oh, wow. And they end up with high fevers, a rash, red eyes, vomiting, diarrhea, and then most importantly, or the one that really makes us most nervous, is that it can truly affect the heart. It can cause the arteries of the heart to become enlarged. It can cause arrhythmias where the heart beats irregularly. It can cause fluid buildup around the heart. And, you know, you think, okay, it's only 300 cases, but still, if you were one of those... Yeah, if you were one of those parents taking care of if that's your child, you don't want your child to be that one of 300. Yeah. And as the cases are rising of the COVID-19 in the U.S., we're also seeing the cases of MISC go up with that. Yeah. And largely, children have been a protected population because they haven't been in school this entire time. Mm. And now we're about to send them back to school. So as pediatricians, we're a bit nervous about what's to come once the kids all start to gather again.
Which is beautiful segue into our very next question, because that's been the question on really multiple parents' lips, really all throughout the nation, as far as what do we do with the kids as far as getting them back in school. You know, that's been a big political issue. A lot of different groups have been advocating that we should reinstate school and act like everything is fine. Other groups have been pushing for online schools, and it's been a very contentious issue. Now, for those who don't know, the American Academy of Pediatrics actually put out a statement on this fact, just because on this topic, because they were, I'm sure, bombarded with questions from concerned parents. And they officially stated that school systems should get kids in school because they feel the benefits of social interactions are worth it. Now, you know, it's been a very controversial decision. And, you know, a lot of parents have been pushing back, and a lot of people have been speaking out. Some potentially saying there's some bias or political issues that may be influencing the decision. So what do pediatricians like yourself feel about this? And what is your general feeling in the community of pediatricians as far as their thoughts on this decision and the overall kind of viewpoint regarding kids getting back in school, whether they should delay it or they should resume like it's, you know, business as usual?
So I would say, as in general, pediatricians seem to be very split on whether kids should go back to school or not. I'm in a few COVID-19 pediatrician groups on Facebook where we discuss what's the latest, like what's going on, how do you feel about this, what research are you guys, what research is being put out, and what are you all seeing in your practices? And so there's been plenty of discussions about kids going back to school, and some of the pediatricians want all the kids to stay home, and some of them are saying go back. According to what the American Academy of Pediatrics statement said, they didn't just say just send all the kids back. You know, there were some caveats in there, but the main thing that they were saying why the children should go back is because with these kids being at home, there's seem to be rising rates of depression, anxiety, obesity. And I'm actually seeing that in my clinic as I'm doing my well checks this summer. I'm seeing teenagers that are depressed. And I'm seeing even young kids who are anxious because they're scared they're going to die from COVID-19.
Oh, wow.
And I've seen kids gain 15 to 20 pounds on average since March because there's no sports, there's no activities. The parents are scared to even let them go outside and play. Mm-hmm. So they're indoors, they're bored, they're eating all day long, snacking, and they're gaining weight. So,
by going outside, the one thing that we've all stressed here, I think being outside is probably the safest place to be honest, especially if you're talking about avoiding the virus. So it's always, a good idea to get outdoors, get fresh air, working out outdoors. I know there was one time they were saying that you need to wear a mask if you're not within, if you're even within 10 or 12 feet because of potential spread while exercising. But I think those have definitely been overblown. I think outdoor activity is relatively safe and something that I think, we've been kind of really stressing in general. But, this is one thing that I think a lot of people are not too sure about, and it's, I think, contributing to this, like you said, obesity we're seeing in kids because of parents even being afraid to go outdoors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, ultimately, I think, again, more education is really the key, but, you definitely don't want to decrease your activity in general, because if you get obese, that actually puts you at increased risk for the coronavirus complications. So fitness is very important. So, sorry, go ahead, doctor.
Yeah, so, we, based on all of that, we know the reasons why the children should go back to school. Now, how they go back to school is going to be dependent on your community. So personally, I don't feel like it should be time for, if your city still has very high COVID-19 rates, then that's not a good time for these kids to go back to school. Other countries that have sent their children back to school were able to flatten the curve and reduce their new COVID-19 rates, which in general means that in the community, their COVID-19 spread was very low, which also reduces the possibility of the children contracting it from each other.
Absolutely.
But if here in the U.S., where we're still having hot cities with such high rates.
Yeah, we're breaking records daily,
unfortunately. Yes, we definitely are. And if the children go back to school, that means that they're more likely to be exposed at home, which means that they're going to bring it to school and expose their classmates. So there are some places in the U.S. where it is safer, not 100% safe, but safer to send kids back to school. And then there's definitely, especially in some of our major metropolitan areas, where it's still not safe to go back to school.
Before we go into details, we're going to go to a quick break, and then we're going to come right back and talk more with Dr. Obuehi, go into some of the details regarding some of the hot spots around the globe, and really kind of go more regarding some of the approaches towards children and whether or not, we are, doing the right thing or do the wrong thing. Again, this is Dr. Barry with the Health and Wellness Connection with special guest Dr. Obuehi. We will be back in one quick second. Let's hit these commercials. Peace. Hello, guys, and welcome back to the second half of what is, I think, an awesome show. We're talking coronavirus, of course. So what else is there to talk about, unfortunately? But we have a special guest in the building, Dr. Ngozi Obuehi, staff pediatrician here in Houston, Texas. And she's here helping us get a better understanding about the coronavirus and how it's affecting our children. We want to make sure we look out for them, and we're trying to get good information, and we got good people telling us good stuff. So doctor, tell us, what are your thoughts? You were talking about Houston and some of the things we're seeing down here, and we're going to kind of go also other areas as well, but let's just, Houston's kind of where we're kind of talking about. Tell us, so what are your thoughts as far as Houston's numbers and their potential risks with school reopening in the fall versus other cities?
Well, I definitely think right now our cases are still really high. And so if we send kids physically back into the building right now, the possibility of kids contracting it from each other and another shutdown of the schools is, to me, almost imminent. So HISD, Houston Independent School District, currently has a plan of the children starting back online for the first 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And then with a plan to reopen and kids going physically back to school by October.
Can I ask you a question? What do you think of that, though? The whole 3-week period? What is the point of the waiting 3 weeks? Like, I don't understand it. Like, in 3 weeks, everything will be fine, or the kids will be ready to be exposed. Like, what is the reason? Like, I know, were there pediatricians involved in that decision? Somehow, I don't think so. But
probably not. Like, but what is this? I think the goal is that they're hoping that cases will start to come down, like to give time for cases in the community to come down, so that way the kids can safely go back to school. But the way, as high as our cases are here in Houston, I just don't think that by October they'll be low enough for it to be totally safe for kids to physically go back to school.
To be honest, all the things I'm reading are predicting a surge in September and probably, you know, pretty high numbers during October. So I don't know why this October thing has become like, okay, we're going to reopen in 4 weeks and everything should be back. But again, I know there's two kind of factions here. One wants to reinstitute in-school learning immediately. Mm-hmm, another group wants to do online school for a year. I'm like, I would think there would be like a compromise between those time periods, and it seems like those who want an immediate, you know, institution of school are kind of winning here, because that seems pretty soon in my opinion. But yeah, so let's talk about the numbers a little bit more, because again, just to get you guys recap, we usually do it at the top of the show, but I forgot, but we're going to do it now. Total cases worldwide at the time of this recording, it's, you know, first week in August, and summer 2020. What a summer. Mm-hmm. But either way, 18 million cases of coronavirus worldwide, about 704,000 deaths. One thing that has been noted is that the death rate has been dropping, I should say. Good. But definitely there's still a lot of death, too many, unfortunately, because every death is a tragedy. But the good news is that we have almost 12 million have recovered. So not everyone, you know, the coronavirus is not a death sentence. That's one thing a lot of people like to promote. You know, I've seen when someone says they had coronavirus, you see these rip comments and, you know, very inappropriate. Like, you know, overall, people are surviving coronavirus, you know, something that can be treated with symptomatic treatment. Now, again, there's a lot of people coming out with cures, and that's one thing we're going to talk about in a future episode. But, you know, at this point, there's no official cure. So anyone telling you they have a cure, again, the data has not, you know, shown it to bear. But again, you know, there are people working on things now that are looking like it could be helpful as far as reducing the numbers of deaths. But at the same time, you know, we still want to make sure we understand the importance, because there is no official, you know, cure, if you will. Now, again, quick recap of the hotspots. Again, USA is still the top nation. Trump did say we would be the number one when it comes to coronavirus. And unfortunately, I think we have reached that status. Not the most appropriate way we would like to. But either way, we got 4.9 million people in the United States with the coronavirus at this point in time. About 54,000 new cases every day at this point in time. So still leading the pack. Well, actually not leading, sorry. Brazil is actually leading with new cases per day at 56,000. And they have 2.8 million total infected cases. Of course, Brazil, as we stated multiple times on this podcast, led by President Bolsonaro, someone who also considered the coronavirus a hoax. And unfortunately, people are dying in large numbers as a result. So, you know, we'll continue to look at Brazil and kind of monitor what they're doing. India, also another country that's actually surging, unfortunately, during these summer months, with a total of 1.9 million coronavirus cases, 50,000 cases as well per day being discovered, and about 849 deaths. So, again, India, which was initially considered not as affected as some of the other, you know, countries, now having a pretty significant coronavirus wave. So, and of course, also those are the top three. You know, we do like to comment on some of the African countries, because you know, they are also still having their coronavirus issues, particularly Nigeria. 44,000 cases total, 304 new cases, as well as deaths, about 14 total recorded. And another country that's very big in Africa that's also considered kind of, I guess you could say, the majority of cases of coronavirus is South Africa. And I want to get these numbers here so I can make sure I tell you the accurate data. And they're not coming up here. I don't know why. Somehow it escapes my notes here. But while I look for that, did you have anything you want to comment on regarding the numbers in general, regarding the coronavirus and some of the hotspots we're seeing across the globe?
Yeah, so I was recently reading an article about the rise in cases in Australia, because Australia is currently going through their winter months. You know, while we're in our summer, they're in their winter. So a lot of times America can look at Australia to kind of see, usually we will look at them to see how flu is going to affect us. But now we can look at them and see how COVID-19 is going to affect us. So they actually were able to get their numbers extremely low. And now they're starting to see a surge in cases since the end of June. So it's a bit worrisome for me, especially as a pediatrician. One of our scariest times of the year is the winter time, because we see RSV, we see flu, you know, and the kids are generally very much affected by those. And now we're possibly going to add on COVID-19 surge with the, you know, cold and flu season. So definitely quite scary.
Mike, could you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, so speaking of Australia, it seems like they do have a surge, actually, as you stated. Yes, 412 new cases and 11 deaths. So still very low, total 18,000 cases. So they're actually doing overall very good, especially compared to the United States of America. So yeah, you're absolutely right in that regard. So yeah, let's and also I did finally find the South African numbers, and they have again total 520,000 cases with 4,000 new cases daily, so quite a bit, and then 345 deaths daily as well. So it's definitely pretty significant as far as the number of people suffering from the coronavirus, and it's definitely real now as far as the overall approach toward the treatment. Of course, vaccines are big in the discussion right now. A lot of trials going on currently. I've been saying that it's probably going to end up requiring mass vaccinations to get things back to completely normal. I mean, what are your thoughts on that kind of idea as far as how we get back to normal?
As a pediatrician, I'm seeing a growing number of anti-vaxxers, and I see also a growing number of people who refuse the flu vaccine. Yeah. So even though we say mass vaccinations for the COVID-19, I just have a feeling that a lot of people are not going to take it, unfortunately. So it needs to be a combination of both vaccines and then as well as an effective medication for it too. So for those who actually do get it, how are we going to treat them? And of course there's been a lot of controversy recently over certain types of medications, but still more research needs to be done so that we know that we're treating with an effective course of medicine with a very low side effect profile.
Absolutely. Yeah, so hopefully, a lot of countries and companies are working on different treatments. We've talked about a lot of them as well. I think one of the popular ones that were mentioned, especially in the African continent, was the COVID Organics from Madagascar. Now, that was the initial big cure, quote unquote, but funny enough, when some of the samples were sent to different countries, actually, they started doing their own studies. And I know one study came out actually regarding that initial cure, and it proved to be ineffective. That was actually out of Nigeria. So, these cures that are coming out slowly but surely, it'll be interesting to see how they're assessed and, whether or not they're truly, efficacious, meaning, able to treat the disease and really eliminate it. I guess in my opinion, it seems like historically, I don't know of any truly effective antivirals. Now, that being said, there are some meds that can help reduce the virus production and helping, reduce the ability to get infected. But if, for instance, like bacteria, like antibiotics, for instance, actually destroy the bacterial organism. And it's, something that has been difficult for scientists to create is something that destroys a viral organism while it's in your body. Yes. So that's the tricky thing. And so just because of the way viruses work and kind of their overall biology, it's been a kind of a struggle for science to really find a way to destroy a virus in your body without hurting the person. So, we've had, challenges before. And I think that effective treatments and effective cures have been discovered despite the odds. So I do think it's not beyond us, but, it's been something that's, been difficult for scientists in general to kind of deal with. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how everything kind of plays out. I think, you know, the vaccination thing is a real issue. And if they start, you know, mandating a forced vaccination, especially with the sense that a lot of them seem to be government backed. So if government's putting money in something, they're going to want to get that money back. I can tell you that. So I think instituting mandatory, you know, this and that to ensure that, you know, funding is something that is not, you know, outside the realm of possibility. So, you know, so, oh yeah. So, overall, you know, I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the schools and everything resume. I think Fauci, actually, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the, you know, director of the NIH, he actually stated that he admitted that if we reopen schools, it'll be essentially a experiment and we'll see how it goes, basically. What's kind of, so I don't know if that's kind of like, you know what, this is what it is, you know, even though we know what's one thing, we have people who are saying the other and we don't want to offend people, who knows, but it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And, you know, that's pretty much, you know, my thoughts. Now, as far as you, Dr. Ngozi, we're coming to the end of the show. I want to make sure you give us a chance to shout out, you know, where your practice is, if people want to reach out to you, your social media, like how can people reach out to Dr. Buehi and get more insight or maybe schedule an appointment?
Okay, well, my clinic is Texas Children's Pediatrics, the Palm Center, and I don't have a social media, but
I know.
I know in this day and age, but yes, if you Google us, you'll be able to find us, and you can definitely schedule an appointment. We're always accepting new patients. We accept all insurances, including Medicaid. And then I think the one thing I really want to depart with the parents out there is I am really encouraging all the parents to get your child a flu shot this year. You know, we have cold and flu season coming upon us, and the one thing we don't necessarily want to worry about for your child is the flu. If your child is running high fevers, then it'll be great to say, okay, he or she got the flu shot. And now we can really delve into, could it be COVID or could it be something else? So really try your best to protect your child this season, get the flu shot, make sure they're wearing a mask, in and out of school, and, try to keep them home as much as possible, just to protect them until we have a better hold on this virus.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome advice. All right. So again, thank you, Dr. Obuehi, for joining us today. And also, listeners, thank you guys for listening and, you know, being a part of the show. If you have any questions, definitely don't hesitate to reach out to the show. Myself, you can get my email, drberryhealth@gmail.com. And of course, you can find me on Instagram at drberrymd. Again, thanks for joining us today on the Health and Wellness Connection radio show / podcast. Again, listen up. We'll be here next week, Thursday, 4 p.m. as well, broadcasting on Afro Vibes Radio. Again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Health and Wellness Connection podcast and radio show. For more information on ways to get healthy, please check us out. www.anchor.fm/HW Connection. Here you can re-listen to the show, check out older shows, and even further support the show by becoming a subscriber to the podcast. Please check us out today. Again, that's anchor.fm/HW Connection. And also, don't forget to follow Dr. Buehi on Instagram @drberrymd. Until next time, stay healthy.